Welcome back to Mining Pod. Today's show is joined by Sebastian Hess, co-founder of Blockgreen, a protocol for buying and selling hash rate. We discuss the buyers, the sellers, and how Blockgreen thinks of energy. Welcome back to the Mining Pod. We're recording live in Miami, Florida. This conversation is coming to you a few days or weeks later, depending on when we decide to publish it. But we're really excited for this conversation. Seb, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So first off, let's go through Blockgreen and your guys' team's experience in mining, how you guys came to your solution. We were just talking like 2 seconds before I hit the record button. In the name, it's green, Blockgreen, but you guys do a lot of other stuff outside of that, and you think of it like you abstract more outside just green mining, and you guys are providing a capital solution for what is a problem for a lot of Bitcoin miners, which is like bringing energy, ESG, Bitcoin mining all together into a perfect bow. So in your own words, yeah, how do you explain Blockgreen to a layman or a miner that you're bringing into the business?
Sure. So Blockgreen is, by essence, a marketplace enabling liquidity to be exposed to the Bitcoin mining industry. The way we structured our platform is really to connect to matchmake Bitcoin denominated capital with hash rate. And the way this works is that as we started Blockgreen, we actually did a pilot in Sweden where we were mining from excess energy produced by a wind farm. And we found it extremely difficult to access reasonably priced capital to grow our operation. And at the same time, there is plenty of capital that was Bitcoin denominated. And we thought there's definitely a play to connect this idle capital with the industry that secure the network. And the way we kind of structured it was to look at the commodity space. There is already a lot of different financial products, derivatives that were widely adopted and used. And looking at the mining industry, that was not the case. So our approach was that miners are, predictably producing Bitcoin. They could actually sell an exposure to their future revenues derived by their hash rate to access capital, working capital in the first place to grow their operation, but also as a form of kind of revenue hedge. So if you're able to receive upfront to get the revenue delivered upfront and to sell against, fiat or to keep those Bitcoins, you have an edge both against exchange risk, but also against hash rate fluctuations. The buy side comes with a completely different kind of approach. The buy side comes with Bitcoin. They are looking to yield on Bitcoin and stay native, so without using a bridge, without necessarily going onto another L1. And they get as an upside the discount rate between what the hash rate ends up producing and the present value that they deliver to the miners. So you could look at it from a factoring perspective, which exists in many industries, or from a streaming perspective, which exists in commodities, especially gold, silver, platinum, where you have companies that offer that to the industry and are very successful. So that was our angle. I think more broadly, we think there's kind of a need for a Bitcoin native capital market solution. We don't take custody. We're not a centralized entity. So we really matchmake the two sides in order to create transparency and also choice. So you know your counterparty, you know you're working with this miner, you understand the terms, you understand the exposure that you have to their operation, which kind of solves this kind of black box issue that we had seen with many centralized players like BlockFi, Celsius, that end up, disappearing.
Disappearing, yes, or ending up in court.
That's right.
So yeah, let's keep breaking down the model a little bit more. So you guys are essentially a matchmaker between capital and Bitcoin miners, and you do this through a DeFi protocol of sorts, right? Is my understanding, or
no?
You're shaking your head no. So
no, there's no DeFi. I mean, DeFi would require kind of smart contracts.
Yeah.
And we are built on Bitcoin. So there's no DeFi in the mix. What we do is that we sit in the middle of this platform. We onboard the two sides. We are a financial intermediary, so like a money servicing business. We need to KYC and AML the two sides of the platform, which means by default, we work with institutions. So we work with mid-sized to large miners. Same goes with the capital side. It's institutions that have millions or more of Bitcoin on the balance sheet as treasury. And we then enable the onboarded miners, once they've also passed a what we call KYM, so a due diligence, to open vaults. And a vault is basically an opportunity where the miner is selling from a certain date a set amount of hash rate for a set duration. And there's a pricing of that hash rate. So the pricing actually is derived from Bitcoin to petahash, so it's a hash price. And this hash price already includes this forward-looking perspective on where network hash rate is going, where difficulty is going, brought back to a present value with this discount rate, which is the cost of capital. So you think about that, that's the way the other side makes money. Mm-hmm. So it's a DCF on projected mining revenues, Bitcoin denominated. And that's kind of the price at which those opportunities are kind of distributed to the buy side. And then the buy side has access to the same platform. They can then browse and discover those different vaults and decide to allocate capital to one or to another.
Okay, so the vaults is what I was thinking of. Tell me a little about that, like how you would put a miner into a certain vault using the KYM, you said, right? Know your miner?
Yes. So the vault is basically a multisig, right? So that multisig represents the pool wallet where the liquidity is then pooled from the different buy sides. It represents also the wallet that receives back the rewards from the hash rate that has been sold by the miner. And on that pool, you then access information on the counterparties. So you know that miner owns that much hash rate. That's the sites that they have. That's kind of the uptime. That's the equipment. That's the source of energy, the cost of energy. There's actually a data room that is attached to it. And there we have structured the information that was analyzed from the miner. So with publicly listed miners, we have a lot of public information. With privately held miners, it's mostly information provided by the company. And based on this information, the miner is kind of distributed and shown to the buy side. And that's also based on this information that the buy side decides whether or not to allocate capital.
Gotcha. So on the miner side, I guess the public, a lot of these public miners, a lot of it is public in the name. And so you have that information there. On the private side, how difficult has it been to be able to like get some of this information? Do you guys like have a minimum set of criteria that you pull from them? And has it been difficult onboarding any of these miners? Or are they pretty excited to just be able to have this financial product, which really just like sort of smooths revenue curves for them, I would imagine?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of education, right? So first of all, you came out of the woods, you're unknown, you're a Swiss company. You know, we were lucky to have pretty decent investors in our seed round, which gave us some credibility. But it's been a lot of work on the business development side to really kind of, I would say, explain our solution, showcase that we're serious, that we know what we're doing, and that there is actually buy-side demand. I think there has been previous products trying to solve not the same issue, but trying to kind of build a marketplace for hash rate, and they mostly failed because there is limited amount of interest on the buy-side. This is changing as the industry is also becoming more professional, and that kind of requirement to, as you mentioned, secure free cash flows, stabilize revenues, is becoming more and more relevant. But it's been a lot of conversations, I would say. Right now, we're looking at onboarding, I'd say, a handful of miners every month. We've already have 5 or 6 miners onboarded. It's been, I would say, quite similar on the private and public side because, I mean, it's their willingness to onboard. We're not forcing them with a gun to their heads, right? So if they decide to come to us, then they know that there is this requirement. I would say what has been kind of very interesting and where there is a lot of learning is around benchmarking, right? Trying to understand really what makes a mining firm top tier versus the rest and what are the KPIs that are very important. And there we've been learning a lot as well throughout the journey. We do mine ourselves a little bit, so we also understand more and more how this business works. But then there's the educational part on the other side, trying to translate this information into kind of risk criteria for the buy side, which is also a lot of work.
Yeah, so I can think of a few products that are like similar. So let's stay with the miners, the miners onboarding. The biggest problem with these hash rate products historically, or one of the biggest problems I should say, is that you have a credibility problem with miners where they can direct hash rate to a DeFi smart contract, or they can send it to a multi-sig like you guys are doing, or they can send it to a custodian. But if you don't have physical control of the miners, there's always a way to redirect hash rate. And so when hash price pumps, then basically the miner has reneged on the contract and the miner can't really get slashed in any sort of way.
Yeah.
Unless there's a pile of capital somewhere else giving a credible commitment, you have an issue there. How do you guys think about that? And how do you guys sort of like force miners to stay giving hash rate even when it turns against them and it would be more profitable to stay mining yourself as opposed to giving it to one of these contracts?
Yeah. I mean, there's a contractual relationship, right? So there's a legal obligation. That's number one. Number two, there's collateral being posted by the miner. So 30% of the notional is held in escrow, which means that in case the miner does not behave according to the contract, there's a right of liquidation on the collateral. It is a not fully collateralized agreement. So you could argue that, you know, even with the 30% posted, it, in the case where hash price, you know, triples, there could be an incentive on the miner side to, you know, act in the way you described. I think because we're working with institutional miners, listed miners, I think there's definitely a lot of risk for them to do that, right? So yes, there is asymmetry of risk. And that's also why the discount rate is sufficiently well priced to make up for the risk.
Gotcha. Yeah, some of the DeFi solutions are interesting for it, but I kind of like the legal contract, especially since like miners are physical people in physical places under jurisdictional law. Let's go over to the buy side for the buyers here. Who are you like really seeing onboarding to this? Again, there's some other products. I think Luxor launched something somewhat similar. We'll get into competitors in a little bit because as much as these all are similar, they're also very different. So we'll get into that in a little bit, but who are you guys seeing on the buy side of this? Is it institutions, family offices, or is it just like other people who just want exposure to hash rate, but they don't want to deal with plugging in ASICs?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of that. Yeah. Our first clients are exchanges with a strong footprint in Europe, custodians with a lot of Bitcoin on their wallets, hedge funds, trading arms, family offices. So I think it's covers most of the different kind of usual suspects that have Bitcoin. We're also working with a pilot for like an ETP fund that actually has regular purchase of Bitcoin that is required. So they're able to secure that. It's of interest. In terms of the competitive landscape, I think, well, there are solutions offering hedging solutions. I think the one of the best one out there is definitely Luxor's NDF. I personally, and that's my take, I don't think this is necessarily a competitor. I think our solutions can actually work together quite well to offer a very good edge to the miner, both on the hash price, but also on the revenue side. And then there's DeFi stuff that has been tried. I've never seen any of the DeFi stuff really take off, to be honest. I think there's definitely issues around, especially for large miners, counterparty risk, because well, with DeFi it's a bit more complicated to KYC and AML. It's also a risk to deal with retail versus institutions. But absolutely, I think there's different companies trying to solve this issue.
Yeah, so a few more things on the mining side, the exchange side, then we'll go over to the energy topic. For the DeFi thing, I mean, I've seen a few. We've had the guys from Alchemia Protocol on the podcast once or twice. Hasn't really launched past beta. I think they've done some like internal stuff with some miners, but to your point, like the DeFi stuff hasn't really taken. I want to talk about liquidity for a second, though. How do you guys think about like bringing in liquidity? Because there always seems to be a mismatch problem where, you know, for listeners, just meaning like you can onboard a huge miner, well, then no one's going to buy their hash rate, or you can have a huge buyer come and there's no hash rate to purchase. So how do you guys think about like scaling this product and bringing people in?
Yeah, I think so 2 points here. I was having a lot of gray hairs thinking about how I could get liquidity on this product, and turned out I was quite wrong. We got actually, because we focused also a lot on that to get started, we got actually much more liquidity than we were able, or kind of buy side demand that we're able to kind of allocate. Because the way we went to market was kind of to remove a lot of the complexity around, well, you're buying hash rate, it's priced at, you know, it is priced per petahash. We really took it from an angle of saying, we can offer you an expected yield on your Bitcoin holdings that is, you know, above 5% or 5% and above, which in the case sometimes much higher. And this has unlocked kind of a lot of liquidity that was never going to go after like a pure derivatives, at least at a time. So we have demand. Of course, it's not a zillion companies right now. We're just getting started. But I think this use case will make the buy side much more, I would say, comfortable with the product than purely they're pricing a derivative on hash rate. That being said, it is linked to hash rate, and there still needs to, you know, educate the two sides on our solution. Absolutely.
Definitely. I mean, I think as like a miner personally, it'd be nice to have like smoother revenue curves because it is just quite complex. And every time you have like derivatives come in to sort of smooth those things out, it helps out your business model.
Yeah. And there's large demand. I mean, like right now we're not able to facilitate it, but we could do 300-400 Bitcoins easily per trade.
Wow.
Which is substantial.
Yeah.
Given we started a month ago.
Yeah.
We don't have yet kind of miners that want to do this kind of trades because they're also testing the solution, or the ones that are now live cannot do this size of trades.
Yeah.
But it's definitely something that we want to ramp up. And to your point about how do we create that, I think it's mostly by trying to make those agreements sticky. Right? So instead of trying to do 12 month forward and kind of a one-off, I have ways to also make them recurring. So they're rolling, right? Every 3 months they roll, there's a repricing. It's easier to price hash rate 3 months forward than 12 month forward. So although we could do any duration if there is demand, that's also a way to kind of make it a bit simpler to use.
Do you have like a MOQ for this, like the minimum amount?
Yeah. So right now, minimum transactions have been around 25 to 50 petahash. The largest, around 200-250 petahash.
Catch up.
Yeah. I mean, there's also costs associated with onboarding. It's work. And buy side liquidity is not interested to do 5 Bitcoin because, they have much more. So it's also our mission to unlock that for them so that they come back and use this product regularly.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Let's talk about one more thing on the market side and then go over to like the energy side of things. So the one thing that I think of just as an American with a hash rate product in hash rate tokens historically is a securities question. And you guys are based out of Europe. So I assume a lot of your buyers and sellers right now are Europe based.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of hash rate in the US. So how do you think, or has your legal guidance spoken to you about like the securities issue around this sort of product, and how do you guys think about it?
Yeah, no, we spent a fair bit of month working with US lawyers to avoid that. Without giving too much, it's much more structured like a factoring solution, so a revenue-based finance, than it is as a derivative, which has some limitations and kind of, I would say, the devil is in details. So far, we have not run into any problems when it comes to showing that to publicly listed miners and running that through their legal teams. So that was always the angle that we took for Europe and outside of the US. We have regular status in Switzerland, so we're able to offer the solution to institutional accredited investors without any problem.
And one actually question I'm going to add on to that is just because I'm curious, have you noticed like a different temperament between European investors and American investors in a product like this, or even with just Bitcoin in general?
Yes. I think in general, Europe is a bit less served than the US. So there's definitely more interest in something innovative like that, because here I think there's big companies that already kind of do miner finance and so on and so forth. So it's been harder to kind of crack that nut. I think in general for Bitcoin, I feel Europe is as interested. It's just that we're lacking some of the large players that you have here. And it's also a gap to fill. I mean, we've also seen firms like Galaxy opening a large office in London, focusing on Europe, because there is, I think, growth potential there that might be already tapped here in the US.
Is that like a crypto question or like a Bitcoin question, or is it a mining question in your opinion?
I think it's, I like to say crypto question, but if I was to say one of the three, it would be a crypto question. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. But to be fair, we don't have a ton of mining guests from Europe on the show. Every once in a while we do, but there's just like, it's obviously mining in Europe, but it's not as big.
It's been tough, right, for European miners. So yeah. Price of energy skyrocketed. We had some pretty heavy pushback on the regulatory side. Sweden started taxing data centers in a way that makes it even, I think, almost impossible to mine or at least open new facilities. There's a lot of public pressure, especially where there is energy, so in the north of Europe, against mining. And it's been, again, kind of singled out for everything that goes wrong with the energy market, despite the fact that it's tiny and irrelevant. So definitely it's difficult. There's also right now in Europe still an energy crisis, right? So big countries like Germany are still kind of mostly buying their power outside or burning coal and so on and so forth. So I would say the market is much more complicated than it is here, where you still have, places where there is stranded energy, where you can be very innovative around, the technology to access the energy, like flaring. But I hope, at least from a regulatory standpoint, that Europe is doing a better job than the US. At least from our standpoint, very complicated to understand really the direction that the US is taking for Bitcoin, for Bitcoin mining, and if you want to englobe crypto as well. Whereas in Europe, they love regulation. That's the only thing they can really do there. So, you know, they've been kind of taking steps towards at least clarity and making it simple to understand what you can do, what you cannot do, and how to structure things.
Appreciate that. Yeah, my understanding, just from like cursory understanding of news with crypto and Bitcoin, is like the MiCA regulation in Europe is helping. They're taking like an approach where they're following things and putting regulations in place for stuff they understand and waiting and seeing for things they don't quite understand yet. While opposed in the US, it's
blocking,
piecemeal, slap. We're going to give you a huge fine,
yeah,
but not actually give guidance. Okay, let's talk about the energy side of things. And one context bit for this is I did see like Troy Cross, who I like really respect in the space, talk about how he really liked your guys' solution on the energy side of things, which makes it like more interesting because there's a lot of competitors, like I said. I believe he said that. So if I was wrong, Troy, I apologize. But
no, he did. So
okay,
you're right.
Real-time confirmation. I'm okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to just hand it right over to you. How do you guys think about like the energy profiling, how you guys bring miners into your space? Like, how are you guys going about the due diligence process? You said before you started recording that you don't care too much about what sort of energy people use, but like I would suppose that it incentivizes people to use good energy if they do use your product because someone would be more inclined to purchase the product.
Yeah, I think what I said is that we don't pretend to be energy experts ourselves. I mean, we have a perspective. We've been learning a ton the past years. When it comes to how to make a grid efficient, understand that it's not just about renewable, right? Renewable and then the grid is fine. Absolutely not. And then the role that Bitcoin mining plays at different points along the value chain is different. And so when it comes to our solution, we are writing a kind of manifesto on how we think Bitcoin and energy kind of, you know, match, and what's the value out of Bitcoin for the energy market, for the grid, for a transition to a more renewable grid, for example, or for mitigation of methane, carbon dioxide. From that standpoint, we let our marketplace price this component, meaning that if you have miners that have, you know, very interesting strategies around how they capture heat or how they mitigate any kind of gas, then the capital by default, because there is an ESG pressure on institutions, be more inclined to allocate capital to a miner that does that against a miner that just like pulls energy from the grid, which there's nothing wrong about that.
Yeah.
It's just that we think that allocation of capital and growth capital will kind of push the industry towards a certain direction, and we let the market kind of dynamic drive this. We're not here to kind of pretend that a miner is better than the other, right?
Yeah. How do you guys go about in the KYM process, or maybe another process when you're onboarding people into understanding their energy? And the background for that question is a lot of times even utilities are lying to people about what kind of energy you're using. So some miners don't even know, and they're claiming energy credits they shouldn't be claiming in the first place. So how do you guys verify these things?
Yeah. So we don't do that. We don't verify these things because we don't pretend to know better than anyone else, right? So there's a lot of solutions trying to build kind of carbon credits or solutions, especially for miners, and that's their business. And I wish them the best of luck in doing that. For us, it's more about kind of the KPI around how the miners are sourcing energy. And of course, if you have behind the meter contracts, of course, behind the meter can mean many things, and that doesn't mean you don't pull energy from the grid. But if you have a contract that secures a certain price of energy, that this source of energy is reliable, and we know that this can, you know, translate into a certain uptime and clarity around how this miner is going to be able to actually deliver the hash rate, then that's a component of how we vet counterparty risk. Of course, we also show where the energy is coming from, and that's more to create transparency so that the buy side can decide whether or not they want to be, you know, exposed to a miner that has nuclear and, you know, grid or whatever, like, you know, whatever is the source of energy, it's up to them to decide. Not only do I understand the financial kind of position of the company, their operational excellence, but also understand where the energy comes from.
Is that something you guys want to like grow in the future, is the ability to like track down people's energy components? Because I'd be curious about like people like lying about it, just like wholesale being like, we're using grid and it's natural gas and hydro, but it's just coal or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, we don't pretend to know everything. So for sure, like being able to trace every electron that, you know, goes into a mining facility, that's Mission Impossible.
Yeah, it's definitely tough.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, the same logic is applied to offer, as you mentioned, carbon credits or RECs. And are all these RECs and carbon credits actually really where they should be? Is this mostly another kind of financial product that kind of hides revenues and tons of money being made on like over years? I don't know. It's a good question, but for now, what we do is really we trust what the miners provide. We look at the utility bills, and then potentially we'll build something that is a bit more advanced than that. But in our current state, we are quite honest about it.
Yeah, no, I kind of like that bear, like the simplicity of it, because like a lot of people do try to like track those things, and it is very difficult to do so. Yeah. So in terms of like growth from here, how are you guys thinking about it? I mean, you're a new company. There's a lot of competitors on the beat. Definitely like an interest for many people, and people need a market-based solution that's going to provide the correct incentives.
Yeah.
And I would imagine every time Elizabeth Warren opens her mouth, you guys have like an influx of sales because Bitcoin miners need to figure this out somehow. But from a business development side of things, how are you guys approaching this issue?
Yeah, I think we're working to kind of provide the best solution for miners. I'd like to say we're here for miners, right? We're here to provide a solution that makes sense to help them operate their business and offer a solution that really adds value. At the same time, there's, I think, a need in Bitcoin overall to have solutions like ours, because it will help adoption. And if people can actually use Bitcoin to provide capital to miners, that's just like virtuous circle that I believe very, very much about.
Yeah.
We're looking at onboarding and speaking to as many miners as possible. We're looking at also understanding the needs beyond our first product of miners to also find ways to improve our product. We're looking at also the tech stack, right? So Lightning is something that we're very interested about, on how to better and simplify the product. We look also how we could actually make it a bit more decentralized using, for example, hash time lock functions and kind of new innovations around Bitcoin, which is very interesting. It's still nascent and early, but that's a big focus for us. And of course, well, on the buy side, it's about kind of explaining this product, explaining how you can get exposure to mining that is synthetic, because you don't have to buy CapEx. You don't have to learn overnight how to run a data center, but you can just expose Bitcoin to Bitcoin and build this site as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, where can people find your guys' work, or they can find your Twitter or other places that you guys have put out media and content?
Sure. So there's block.green. That's the first place. There's a newsletter that we post every week on the industry. There's our Twitter space. We have something on Noster, but I'm not sure how active we are there. We tried.
Hard to say a public key for memory as well.
Exactly. Or you can reach me on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. And definitely everyone go check them out.
Thanks so much.